Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is gaming attorney Bob Nersessian. We'll be talking to Bob in a few minutes. Recently, all of us received a gift. A listener from Korea has offered to create a log for each show and allow us to post it. For example, on the recent Russell Fox tax program, if you wanted to know where we discuss if free cruises are taxable, we talked about that starting at the 17-minute and 8-second mark on that show. This kind of log will be very useful going forward. So far, we don't have anybody volunteering to create a log for the old shows, but if any of you think that would be interesting, let me know.
Sure. Yeah, we're always...
We asked our listeners for legal questions, and boy, did they respond. Thank you. Let me introduce Bob Nersessian.
I'm sorry, wait. Before we introduce Bob, I just want to say one thing about the show notes. These shows get posted on Thursday afternoons. The show notes may not go up until Friday or Saturday. So I just don't want to get 100 emails going, where are the show notes on Friday morning? So
yeah, but if you're a week late listening to the show, then everything's going to be fine.
Yeah, then everything will be fine.
All right, let me introduce Bob Nersessian. Blackjack Hall of Fame member. He's represented a variety of gamblers in thousands of cases, and he's one of our most popular guests. Bob Nersessian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me back.
Before we get to the questions, I have a joke to share with Bob and our listeners. When I first heard it, I thought this would be the perfect forum for it. I have not told jokes on the air that weren't ad lib before, so I may get nose to telling me this should be my last one as well as my first one. Seems this lady was so mad at her husband, she started hitting him with these classic guitars, which the husband collected. Well, the cops had to break it up. She went to jail, and in the trial, she was found guilty. While trying to figure out the right sentence, the judge looked down and asked her, first offender? She replied, no, Your Honor, first a Gibson, then a Fender. Anyway, I think...
Bum.
Moving on. Maybe this will be the last time.
Saw it coming.
There's an incident at the Seminole Hard Rock Casino in Miami, Florida, where a man was playing top dollar slots in the high limit room and invited a guest to push the button for luck. Well, she was lucky, hit for $100,000, and the casino paid her, not him. 3 weeks after the fact, I heard about this case, put him in contact, and put Bob Nersessian in contact with the injured party. According to the injured party, Nersessian told him he had a claim against the tribe, but Bob wasn't licensed in Florida, so he should get a local lawyer. He apparently tried and could find no local lawyer willing to sue the Seminoles. Although it's been months since this happened, we have some questions. Number one, if you're playing and allow another player to hit the deal button for luck, what determines who gets the money?
Whoever made the bet, but that's the rub. And it may well be a question of fact as to whoever that would be. So that should be determined by a court or an arbitrator of some sort. And that didn't happen in the case as you're describing it. The thing that hit me with this is, if you're in Nevada, because I know, if I remember reading about this right, she also was out of Dodge before he could say a word.
I think she had security escort her out so that he couldn't try to...
He was yelling and screaming, don't pay her, don't pay her, just hold it until we get this figured out.
In Nevada, you get a hold of gaming, and the agent will get out there and investigate it, and there should be at least a 30-day hold while you're trying to sort things out. This goes back to what I've said in my last book and what should be well known by now, which is Indian casinos, OMG WTF. I mean, that is a bad beat. And that is probably a goodly part of the reason why he can't find an attorney in Miami. I've appeared in Indian court. Every one of these tribes, including the ones with 40 members in the middle of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, have a court. And that's your recourse. Most of those courts have a retired judge, but from what I would call real courts. But guess who's paying them? And you know, the tribunal is, while courts are saying they're offering due process, etc., I think you stand a very good chance of getting a rubber stamp for whatever gets the casino off the hook for whatever they want to be off the hook for.
So in this case, since the money to her was already out the door, he's likely not to have received anything? You're getting the facts from me, and so yes, you don't know everything.
You're saying that he talked to me, and I got to make sure I'm not giving up any attorney-client confidences. Although I was not hired as an attorney, the conversations between a lawyer and a person looking to hire a lawyer remain confidential and privileged. But from what you're describing, Bob, I don't see any real chance of getting a tribal court to say that, yes, the tribe has to pay twice. Could happen. At a 50% retainer for the amount of money you're talking about and showing up for a trial, I would think that you could find a Miami attorney to take it. I don't think Miami attorneys are necessarily frightened of the Seminole tribe. But again, and this goes back to things I've said on this show before, most attorneys shy away from anything having to do with gaming or casinos or these regulations because, frankly, except for industry professionals, those are lawyers representing casinos, etc., finding somebody who understands the patron side of anything who's a lawyer is pretty darn rare. In fact, as far as I know, there's three of us in the country, and I can count them on three fingers.
Don't even have to use a thumb. Well, Bob Loeb has to be one of them.
Yes.
And
there's another guy out there taking them named Marvin Vinning. Oh, also Robert McDuff in Mississippi, I think, is doing some. And he's the guy who did the Grosch case.
Uh-huh.
$726,000 for... in a verdict for a detention because the guy refused to show identification. I love that case.
Yeah, that's
I'll bet you do. I suspect you have a citation memorized, and it gets cited a lot in your cases.
Well, it does, but I don't have it memorized, and every time I look it up, I have to look hard because there are actually five different decisions in that case as it was being processed. It's a federal court case.
Okay, so back to this Miami situation. This particular guy basically went into the fetal position for several weeks when this happened, bemoaning his fate. What should he have done to protect his rights?
I have no idea. Isn't that a wonderful answer? He's on an Indian casino. You are not in the United States. You are in the Seminole Nation. Who's there to control it? The Seminole tribe, their police department, their gaming control board and commission. They have one casino, maybe. Do they have more than one or just the one?
Oh, they have several in Florida.
But, you know, whoever the guy is on site that's working for their commission is the guy who makes the call. And how do you overrule him? How do you do anything? He did what he was supposed to do. That's my money. It didn't work. And it may well have been his money. You know, I don't know what to tell you to do when you go south on an Indian casino. I know what you do in Nevada. You get gaming out there. I know what you do in New Jersey. You build a record and you get the police out there and the commission. But the commission does not have any civil authority. On an Indian tribe, you're already way up the ladder while they're making that decision. Right there in front of you. I know, and you know, that I've been successful in some disputes that involve tribal casinos, but...
Especially with donkeys.
But really, I wear that as a badge on my hat because, again, you can count on one hand the times that gamblers have gotten over Indian casinos and their decisions. It's not often. It's their rules, and they can make them up as they go along, which is going to deal with another question you're going to ask me, and we may as well jump right into that.
Okay. A listener writes, I was recently hole carding and held against my will and photographed in an Indian casino where the tribal police got involved and threatened arrest and confiscated $6,000 in casino chips when I would not give them ID. What is a good way to handle a situation like this?
Next time, don't gamble at an Indian casino. I'm sorry.
No, actually,
what do you want to happen? The police were just there. Now, this happens to me, and I've had a number of cases with this, where the police come in and they rubber stamp the casino. And I have judgments against police. I have settlements against police. I get money from the police because they are backing up a casino on a false imprisonment and a battery. Handcuffs, absent legal authority, are always a battery. Okay? That is an intentional tort. Anywhere else in the world, it gets punitive damages. On an Indian casino, who are you going to complain to? The guy who's committing the battery is not going to be investigating the battery. And in the long run, the judge who's going to be deciding whether or not the battery occurred is directly tied to the pocketbook of the tribe. You want a solution. Guess what? Sometimes you put yourself in a place where there is no solution. If you are gambling in Kazakhstan, do you expect due process? When you're in a casino on an Indian reservation, you're in Kazakhstan. It's really that solid of an issue and a problem. The way to change it is to get to your congressman and make sure that standard due process and that the laws in the rest of America begin to be applied to tribal lands. But it is so difficult to do that. There's even a statute that says the courts, they name five states, one of them is California. The courts in California shall have jurisdiction over civil disputes on Indian land. Federal statute. Okay? Gets to the federal courts and they go, yeah, well, Congress said that, but there's also sovereign immunity for the Indian tribes, and the sovereign immunity beats the statute, so therefore the statute doesn't apply, and you have to sue an Indian court.
What fun.
I would just say to our listeners, I wouldn't say don't play. I would say you have to understand going in that it's high risk, high reward. Often the Indian casinos are some of the dumbest, so your opportunities for making money are high in some of them. But just realize that part of your EV, you have to calculate that sometimes you're going to have your money confiscated, and realize that's just going to be part of the loss.
I've seen exactly what you're saying, Richard, and let me add this. Yes, their personnel who are operating those casinos are not as savvy as the ones that you'll find running Nevada casinos or... and I'm talking mostly the smaller tribes, too. I think that the big Indian tribe in Connecticut, and Mohegan Sun, and the other one out that way.
Foxwoods.
Yeah, Foxwoods. They're pretty darn savvy. And in fact, that's not a good thing because they're savvy on their Indian sovereignty as well and will use that to their benefit. But when you're saying that, that is true, and I have known a number of clients and gamblers who have found that very positive game on the Indian casino because they didn't know how to set up the game or they didn't understand their own promotion, and they're giving away up to $800 an hour for a smart player who understands how the given game is working. When they find out that you figured it out and then they figured it out off of you and they look that stupid, they're twice as pissed off and come at you twice as hard.
Hmm.
Okay? That's so as you're working that into your EV, understand that sometimes that EV might even get physical.
Yeah. I used to run into this a lot, you know, 10 plus years ago, when I would play internet casinos. And, you know, we just understood that sometimes the internet casino was just going to stiff us. You know, it was just a cost of doing business. And a lot of people said, oh my God, I would never send my money to an internet casino. They can just steal it. And how do you know they're going to pay you? I was like, you're right. That happens, you know. But on the other hand, there was an awful lot of money to be made. So.
Yeah, and if they do it to you, the internet casinos were a self-regulating industry because there was pretty much full widespread knowledge. And if they did it to you, everybody else figured it out, and all of a sudden they're not in the casino business anymore. True?
Yeah. Okay. A lot of them, yeah. Although a lot of them got away with it, but, you know.
What about, like, Harrah's Rincon, which is now called Harrah's Southern California, is part of the Harrah's system, but it's also owned by the Rincon Band of Mission Indians. Would you expect normal Harrah's rules to apply?
You would, but they don't.
So Indian rules apply there.
Indian rules apply there. I have some things in the can when it comes up that I think I can get around it with. For example, suing Caesars Entertainment in Nevada as the control authority and piercing the corporate veil. But suing in the California court right next door to Rincon, I think that's going to result in a sovereign immunity answer even to the Harrah's entity.
Wow. All right, moving on. In news that came down this week, Attorney General Jeffrey Sessions has reinstituted civil forfeiture. It's now much easier for police to seize cash and other assets from people suspected of, but not proven, to have committed a crime. This is bad news for gamblers who travel with cash. You got anything without expletives to say about this, Bob?
Well, the expletives have already hit my eyeballs and the level of filling up from the bile that starts in my groin, and it's going higher. I don't know what else I can say about it, sans expletives. Nonetheless, okay, I'm taking some issue with what you just said.
Okay.
It hasn't gotten easier. It was always just that easy. Even under Holder, where the Fed stepped back, the states were still doing it under their laws, and the United States Supreme Court, with some of its draconian civil forfeiture rulings from even in the last century dealing with privateers, had made a lot of this authorized. So even though Holder stepped back when he was Attorney General, you were still getting bizarre seizures coming out of the states. I don't know what to tell you. This falls into the Indian casino area, too, because you've created a pool of money. You've created a group of people who can share in that money, be it FBI agents or DEA agents or the state police of Arizona. And if they find money that they think they can hold on to, like any other human being, what are they going to do?
Put it in their pocket.
And that's exactly what they try to do. For goodness sakes, there's a case still going on in Arizona right now, while we're talking, where the person won the money at a casino in the South. And in Chicago, come to think of it. He found a game and he played it to death in Chicago and I believe in Mississippi. He's coming back to Nevada with his Arizona winnings in his trunk. He gets pulled over by the Arizona State Police, who find the money and take it and say it's drug proceeds. Okay? As we are sitting here today, as I understand it, okay, the court in Mississippi said it was legitimately won and it's his. The court in Chicago said it was legitimately won and it's his. The court in Arizona, who's adjudicating the money, and the DA who took the money are still saying, oh, that's drug money. Okay? Why? Because it's multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they are working under the theory of possession is 9/10 of the law, and they have possession. Now, they stole the money to begin with to get that possession. You can hear the ire in my voice. I don't have a way to fix this. I do think that Sessions is being bizarre. I don't understand why these government functionaries think that cash is so darn evil, or that the American dollar should be debased to the point where it is no longer legal tender for all debts private and public, but it is only legal tender as long as the local constabulary says it is, and if they decide it isn't, they get to put it in their pocket. But that's what we're working under. Don't have a fix for it, except, again, write your congressman, take to the streets, whatever it takes. I actually have written my congressman over this stuff. I don't know that it'll make a difference. But maybe if 100,000 of us do that, it might have some effect. Trouble is, my cousin, whose husband works in an auto factory, between the two of them, they make $130,000 a year. What does any of this have to do with them? They're raising their kids. They're on a nice street in a good suburb, and nothing about the civil forfeiture affects them. So they don't care. And so you got this free flow of money that Sessions is now locking in on too. And, you know, simple principles of justice and fairness are going out the window. That sounded like swearing, didn't it?
It should.
I like it when you get fired up.
Yeah, you didn't. You hardly bounce off the ceiling. So it's still early in the program. This should affect tourism. It's like, why should tourists come here with money when it's going to be confiscated? And you know, some countries, like Canada, have warnings to their potential tourists. Be careful if you go to the United States. You might lose anything you have.
You've hit a nail on the head in protecting this industry, the casino industry, and or in the case of civil forfeiture, the government part of the evil triad, business government, and whatever, I don't know what it is, but they've gone overboard. And I've lost my train of thought here a little bit, but what I wanted to get at.
Well, I just want to say that it used to be that the casinos loved to see a guy show up with a suitcase full of cash. Now the casinos are terrified of it because the government has cracked down so hard on the casinos about all the reporting they have to do for anybody who shows up with cash. Otherwise, you would think that the casinos would be lobbying to stop this, but I don't think they can.
I know where I was going with this, and you reminded me. Thank you. Nobody's paying attention to the tourism. Thank you, Bob. There's a recent decision, Slade versus Caesars, by the Nevada Supreme Court, which ends up being a 2-2 split, but since the district court held one way, and it's a little complicated in the way it works out. But here's the bottom line, okay? Since Blackstone, and I think I'm talking the 1500s here, it has always been the law in every common law jurisdiction that an inn, a hotel, okay, must accept all travelers, okay? The Slade decision deals with a letter from Caesars Entertainment to a doctor who wanted to attend a symposium at a Caesars property in Nevada. The letter said, "You're not welcome in any of our casinos." All right? Why? Because the doctor's wife was 86th from a Mississippi casino that he wasn't even in when she was 86th. He just happens to be married to her. Now, Caesars Entertainment takes this guy who would come into town, spend $1,000 to attend the symposium, spend another $10,000 gaming at our tables, eat at the casino, go out, go through the nightlife and everything else, and be a valued and important guest in our town. But Caesars Entertainment decides, we don't like his wife for some reason, so we're going to make sure he can't come here either, and they send him this letter. He sued, said, they're a hotel. They're an inn under the common law. They can't tell me I can't come in if I don't, if I didn't do anything wrong. The Nevada Supreme Court said, yes, they can. You know what else the Nevada Supreme Court did? They effectively said, we don't care what 500 years of common law is. We don't care that since time immemorial, inns could not refuse accommodations to people without good cause. We are reversing that law for Nevada, and now the casino industry in Nevada can throw anybody out of any casino at any time for any or no reason. Now, you don't think that hurts the tourism here? Of course it does. And it's hurting it at the next level, too, because there are innocent people in this town, and I'm familiar with many of them, and I wish the Nevada Supreme Court would figure this out and be familiar with them, too, who are merely sitting at a table where maybe an advantage player is sitting next to them. They don't know this. The casino decides they're going to 86 the AP. They don't know if that's a team there or not, so they 86 everybody at the table, and often that's in a high roller room. Now, you have this player who's sitting there who is not part of the team, who's not an AP, who is dropping 8% of their bankroll every time they run it through, and they've just been thrown out of this casino, so there's no tax on that income. Now, the casino sends that off to Griffin Investigations or OSN, the Oregon Surveillance Network, which is now called Red Hand, or publishes it around, and next thing you know, this person who is a total innocent, who probably over the next 20 years would add $20,000 to our economy, gets 86th thrown out of every other casino in the state because they share this information. They can't even get a hotel room in Nevada, and the Nevada Supreme Court passes a decision that says, you know what, that's perfectly fine. We're happy with that because this casino industry is so strong, and they want to be able to do this, so we're going to give it to them. Damn the tourist money. Full speed ahead. Let's make sure casinos get whatever they got, no matter how bad it hurts the taxpayer base, no matter how bad it hurts the people in this state, no matter how bad it hurts the tourists. You know, the casino industry does not have to be this all-consuming. Let's have some reason on this stuff. Let's make sure that when a person says, this innocent person says, why are you throwing me out? And they say, because we choose to and we're not telling you why. That they actually have to have a reason. Innocent people are being put out on the street all the time. They're being thrown out of their rooms, for yep. goodness sakes.
I have to tell you, we actually, our own little act of, you know, defiance, for a long time, just any time we were in a casino, whether we had heat or not, if we saw high rollers playing, we would just stop by the table and say something to them. Hey, how's it going? Okay, good luck. I'll talk to you later. Right? So they would always see us talking to the biggest players in the casino with the idea that hopefully some of them would get thrown out because of association. If we ended up getting heat or barred, they would go back and see that we had talked to some guy who was betting a lot of money. And hopefully some of them would get thrown out, right? I mean,
wow, that's pretty evil, Richard.
Yeah, well, maybe it didn't really do any good, but you know,
I'll
bet
you, I'll bet you some of those high rollers got put out on the street.
Yeah.
And the state lost the money, and we lost our reputation, and those people went to Missouri or New Jersey or one or Maine or what's the other? Or there's like five states where there is no question whatsoever that a casino can't do that.
Hmm. So if
most
you,
states you can't throw all the other states, 49 other states in Puerto Rico, you can't throw someone out of your hotel without a good reason. And if a casino is attached to your hotel, presumably the casino would be included. Right now, this is the only state because of that Slade versus Caesars decision where the casinos can get away with that stuff. Write your legislator because it is hurting our tax base in this state. It is making me have to pay more for my child's education because of that money being taken out of the coffers that would otherwise be in Carson City that we could use for good public works.
All right. So, glad you...
Stop putting me on this high horse.
Let's get to
one... You can tell he's not passionate about
this. Other than prostitution laws, what laws do Vegas tourists unwittingly break?
Well,
that wouldn't be unwittingly, right?
I've seen four or five times somebody sitting there playing a game, a slot of some type, including video poker,
underage,
with a baby sitting on their lap. No. A curious twist on this might be, here's a weird one. They may be doing things that they think are violating laws that don't violate Nevada laws. For example, there's no Nevada law against being drunk in public.
Or having an open glass of alcohol on the street?
There you said it wrong.
Oh, dear.
As soon as you said on the street, and I'm going to give you a little anecdotal one that I watched happen and know of. Okay? Drunk in public. Walk up. Say, you got to go home. Okay. Takes one step into the public roadway with the parking structure on the other side of that roadway. The cops were waiting for her to do that. As soon as she stepped into the roadway, they threw the handcuffs on her and said, now you're drunk on a public road.
What assholes?
But it is a crime to be drunk on a public road. So they put her into the public road and arrested her for that, but it's not a crime to be drunk in public. Then there's the, sometimes being a good Samaritan in Nevada can get you in trouble. There's a pretty famous case that I wrote about in, I think, both books, where the person found a wallet and went to casino security and said, I found this wallet, and the wallet had, like, money in it, a goodly amount. And all the person wanted to do was to have the person who owned the wallet paged so that they could give it back. The security guard said, no, you don't get to do that. Give me the wallet. We'll take care of it. Didn't say they'd be giving it back. This person very strongly suspected that the security guard was going to take the money, okay? Which is not an unreasonable conclusion. Stood by their guns. Next, the security manager came over, and this person's suspicion at that point is, well, now the manager and the guard are going to split the money, and he stood by his guns. Next thing he knows, he is in God's country, in the back room, in handcuffs, and being arrested for stealing the wallet, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. So
one that I see that's the most often. The law I see most often is, you know, marijuana is now legal, but it's not legal to be smoking it in the parking lots of the casinos.
No, and it's not legal to be smoking it in your room. I'm just wondering, you know, there's a wink, wink, nod, nod here thing with our recent recreational marijuana law, because even in the legislature, they talked about how it will increase tourism here. But unless you're renting an Airbnb where the person is allowing you to smoke in the backyard or in the house, a tourist can't smoke marijuana in Nevada. Because if they're out in public, they can't smoke it. If they're in their hotel room, they can't smoke it. Where are these people smoking the marijuana? You're operating a motor vehicle if you're in you are operating a motor vehicle
even if you're
in
a backseat
car. Yes.
Wow.
Okay.
Do you expect the casinos, they smell marijuana coming out from under the door, do you expect them to enforce this?
Actually, I think it's probably going to depend on whether or not you're in a smoking or a non-smoking room.
Okay, so assuming you're you're in a smoking room, and I'm assuming casinos will thinking somebody smoking, generally speaking, it's to our benefit to let him smoke before he gambles.
Yeah.
And so they would say, technically he's not supposed to do it, but we'll stand up.
They certainly don't care about the people in the parking lot. I mean, I run into this every week. You know, people smoking in the parking garages or parking lots. And they have guys on bicycles driving around the... So they know it's going on. They don't care.
They're not police.
Right.
They're not going to arrest you for operating a motor vehicle while smoking pot.
Right.
Okay? And you're right. They don't care. Why would they care?
Well, yeah. They might care if you give them a
toke. But it doesn't change the fact that it's not legal. Another one would be watch what you have on you. for instance, a lot of people have jobs that have crowd counters. You know, click, click, click.
Yeah.
They're either, I mean, I know this from Detroit, where that is a big part of inventory management. And these guys, a lot of people have crowd counters on their keychains. Well, if you're sitting at a blackjack table and your keys are on the table and somebody comes and a security guard comes by, aren't you now gambling with a device?
Seems a stretch, but
yeah. Yeah, and it's happened.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay.
I did hear about a guy arrested because he was counting his video poker hands, trying to keep track of how many hands he was playing, and he was using one of
those.
There
you go.
Yeah, who got...
Okay. But
there are such easier ways to do that. Usually the reader on the machine will tell you how many points you've played, and it's not hard math.
That's math, Bob.
If you've played 1,000 points and you're playing $5 a hand to figure out that that's 7,000 hands you played, I mean, people can do this.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago, I had a federal judge arguing with me that having a cell phone while playing blackjack could provide reasonable suspicion that you are gambling with a device.
Just having it in your pocket or
yeah,
whatever.
Just having it. Okay? So what are you going to do? I mean, you can't not carry your cell phone.
Right.
And I'm not saying that the federal judge ultimately said, yeah, that'll suffice. But during oral argument on a thing we were dealing with, he definitely said, couldn't the cell phone be a device? Like, yeah, but so could a toothpick that you're breaking into pieces. That doesn't make a toothpick a device, you know? So other than that, hey, everybody, prostitution is illegal in Clark County. Okay.
All right, let's move on to something else. Is there any way to change your Social Security number? And what happens in that case to your old Social Security number?
I think the information transfers to your new Social Security number. And yes, you can get your Social Security number changed. All you have to do is get with a gang, commit a heinous felony, be the person who is narking on those people who you were in with, and get in the witness protection program. Now you'll get a new Social Security number.
All right, folks, now you know how to do it.
There's another way too, okay? If you can show, but the burden is on you to show that you are being harassed or that your financial information is being jeopardized, and again, it's your burden, through your Social Security number, there is a process, if you meet that burden, through which you can go through the Social Security Administration and they will give you a new number and transfer your information to it.
This would be identity theft situations.
That kind of thing, yes.
Okay.
I really liked my witness protection program example.
I did too. I think that's really useful information to all our listeners. New subject. A guy runs up markers of $100,000 in Nevada. In good faith. But shit happens. He loses his job. Wife gets sick. Eventually declares bankruptcy. Do the markers disappear in bankruptcy?
The answer is it depends on which state the debt on the markers is determined in.
Okay, we said he was in Nevada casinos. Does that answer your... Does that...
No.
Okay.
Okay. States have to provide full faith and credit, but to the judgments of other states. So if you're in Texas where all gaming debts are illegal and against public policy and you were able to get into a Texas court first, I think this is the state that I wrote about. This is also in the law for gamblers. You get a court to declare the debt void, then it won't be a debt in bankruptcy court and it won't survive as a debt. All of this comes with another cautionary tale. It is a crime in Nevada to not pay that marker. Now, with the situation that Bob described, there always has to be scienter with a crime. It hasn't been tested in Nevada yet, But even the prosecutor who was prosecuted from the bad check unit historically has agreed with me that if you can show that you were able to pay at the time of the markers, but financial reverses have now destroyed that ability, unexpected financial reverses have destroyed that ability, then it's not a crime any longer. It's not a crime to have welched on those markers. Still, the Clark County prosecutor and the Washoe County prosecutor both aggressively prosecute marker defaults as crimes.
Okay, I want to ask you about, this comes from one of our listeners. On page 30 of your book, The Law for Gamblers, get that plug in there, you talk about Pigou tiles. And you say, and there's no law that actually, I mean, there's no case where this has actually happened, but you speculate that if a group of people were playing Pigou tiles and sharing all the information of their tiles amongst themselves in order to determine the dealer's hand, that would be cheating. So the question is, where does that line get drawn? When does it become cheating and when is it not cheating?
Well, on the Pigou tile example, and on any other example too, they have taken to posting rules of the game on the table. Not some back door rules where you have to ask for a printout and what the rules are, but now you can walk up to some games and casinos and there's various signs posted there, but one of them might be no table talking, etc. That is part of the rules of the game you're playing, whatever is posted there on that sign. And treat that as no sharing information. That's the rule of the game. And if it is determined that you're sharing information, you're cheating.
Okay, so if it's another game where there's no sign that says you're not allowed to share information, then it wouldn't be cheating?
That would be, you know, we've been through this a number of times. When you reach gray areas, you need a court to decide. And that is a bit of a gray area, and I'll tell you why. There are games out there where the historic convention is that there's no sharing information, no intentional sharing of information. I think Pigou tiles is one of those.
Okay. Right.
If that is the convention, then that is the game. And if you're cheating at the game, if you're not playing the game as the game is to be played, you're cheating. Let me contrast that with hole carding. Okay. And in many briefs, I have in my office a 4-inch thick book from the 40s called Hoyle. And you know how authoritative Hoyle is? People just say, according to Hoyle, as a saying. Hoyle is the Bible of the rules. And
if it was in the 40s, it's got to be the Old Testament at best.
No, because a lot of those conventions, and this actually, I actually have used this successfully in blackjack and hole carding issues, where citing to Hoyle, a person who is in possession of cards has the obligation to protect their cards, and the failure to do so is not cheating by somebody who sees those cards. It's that clear. Further, just to give you an example, this is going to be weird. The International Rules of Bridge have the same rule. So do the Canasta Convention. And functionally every game out there,
poker
you
too.
Have to... Yeah, you, exactly. You have to protect your cards. So if you're not protecting your cards, that's on you. And if a dealer at blackjack is not protecting their cards, that's on them. The other thing I would add is, what are you supposed to do in those games, or even in Pigou tiles, if the guy next to you actually knocks over five of his?
By they only accident. Get four. I
think. Okay. Yeah. Four of his.
If he knocks over now, five, that would be cheating.
Yeah. Ooh, where'd that fifth one come from? Guess how many times I've played Paigao tiles?
That'd be zero, wouldn't
yes,
be, I guess.
It would be. All right, so he knocks over all his tiles as he's moving his drink, and you see those. Is the game void? No. Do you have to forfeit because you know that those four tiles are not in the dealer's hand? No. Okay? The thing that I'm getting at is no, the information that you gain can't be gained against the rules, but the rules do not include closing your eyes or not being able to see things that you can see. And on the blackjack example for a hole carder, somebody who found a weak dealer who is functionally showing every down card, my question has always been, what do you expect that person to do? Suppose that my partner, Thea Sankiewicz, has a rule that if a grandmother from Peoria, Illinois, could run afoul of your rule is not a rule and it sucks. Okay.
Well, grandmothers in Peoria are basically blind, so they couldn't see it anyway. I might get mail on that.
Back to where I was on this, though. You now know that there's a six in the hole because the dealer flashed that card to you. What are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to say, wait a minute, this game's over. I saw his card. Hey, everybody, it's a six, and nobody else gets to play their hand, too? There's no remedy for what the supposed cheating is, and it's not cheating because you would ruin the game. The dealer has to protect their card. It's just that simple.
Okay, I'm concerned with the word cheating versus policy. Assume two side-by-side casinos, not related to each other. They each have signs on their table for Paigao tiles, but those signs have different rules on there.
Mm-hmm.
So, presumably, there's some actions you could take which would be against the policy or rules at one casino and not against the policy or rules at another casino. And that might make it against casino policy. They will kick you out for it, but in my mind, that doesn't make it cheating.
I think your mind is wrong.
Okay.
I'm saying that because...
Was I ever married to you? I heard that a lot before.
No, you were not.
Oh, good. That's good news for both of us.
You come up on a game. You come upon a game. That game has rules. If you break the rules, is that cheating? It always has been. If you pay yourself... If you're the banker at Monopoly... And you see that you're supposed to collect $200 for pass and go, but you take three? Is that a violation of a rule, or is that cheating at Monopoly?
I would think that's cheating at Monopoly.
Okay. And again, the casinos get to write their rules. And this is another problem I have with hole carding, or not with calling hole carding cheating or counting a scam or any of that kind of 86ing somebody for being a card counter. Oh, holy crap. You don't like the fact that they can card count your game? Change the rules. And many of them have, switching to 6 to 5.
It's your fault.
Well, but in London...
Yeah, it may well be my fault.
For the casinos going to 6 to 5, it might be your fault?
Yeah, it might be.
In London, the casinos are private clubs, and their rules say that you are not allowed to count cards at blackjack, and they've used that rule to steal money from players. At the end of the day, they just said, this is a private club, you're counting cards, right? Counting cards is against the rules, we're keeping your money.
Private club sounds a lot like Indian casino.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
We have a follow-up question on hole carding that we're going to ask Bob. First, we need to take a brief commercial break. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. Each week in July, Monday through Thursday, if you play 1,250 points in slots, reels, or video poker, you earn a copper gift. Red copper brand. The pans are ceramic-infused copper. I don't know what that means, but one lady I was speaking to last night says they work pretty good. If you earn all four of the gifts, there's an extra five-piece red copper square pan you get for no extra play from July 31st to August 3rd. Every Monday is Prime Monday, where Prime is the name of their sexy seniors, 50 years of age and older. It includes a senior slot tournament, half-off dinner if you play with points, $4 movies, half-off bingo. This is a especially great bargain if you wish to dine at Michael's. Michael's is one of the best restaurants in the city with prices to match. At half price, it's an excellent bargain. The next semester of free video poker classes at the South Point will be on Wednesdays at noon between August 2nd and October 3rd. This will be less than 3 weeks from when this show is aired. If you're at least 21 years of age, you're very welcome. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is Ultimate X Poker. Ultimate X is a 10 coins per line game where each time you get a paying combination, you receive a multiplier for the next hand. Multipliers range from 0, actually it's 1, when you don't score at all, to 12, which in many games you get for a full house. For a 10-play game, then, the sum of the multipliers can range between 10 and 120. Correct strategy requires you consider the sum of the multipliers in making your play. All right, we're talking to Bob Nersessian. We just spoke briefly about hole carding. The big case in Nevada, hole carding was Einbinder. Are other states required to accept the Einbinder case as established authority?
No, but logic dictates that the Einbinder court is the right decision. Back to exactly what we're saying. If you happen to see that, if you're the grandmother from Peoria and you happen to see the dealer's hole card and you know that the dealer just dealt himself a 6 and you're sitting on a 16, even grandma is smart enough to know that I'm not going to hit my 16. Did she cheat? Or what's the remedy? Does she spout off and say, I can't play anymore and neither can anyone else. This is a bad hand. There's no way to deal with it short of playing it out and having the dealer protect their cards.
Actually, Andy Block once did that in a poker tournament. A dealer was exposing the bottom card. So he would announce to everybody at the table, the bottom card's a 3 of hearts. So that he didn't have any information that the other players didn't. He did get, I think it was a 1-round penalty for this.
Really?
Yes. Huh. Another occasion.
But the dealer didn't get any penalty. Let me guess. It was at a Caesars property.
It was World Series of Poker. Another case, the cards were so flimsy, one was actually torn slightly. So it was easy to know that it was a 7 of clubs or whatever it was. So Andy just tore it in half. So they'd have to replace it because it was just not sporting in his mind. He got another suspension for that. So, there's probably a lesson there. We have a couple more questions, Bob. But
I'm not going to mention anything about Ivy League.
About Ivy League?
Yeah. Andy's Harvard.
Andy is MIT.
But then he went to Harvard Law.
Yeah. Sorry, the one I relate to is law. And, you know, I just rub shoulders with so many Harvard lawyers.
All right.
They made me an honorary. Well, that's Eli. No, that's Yale.
Yale is an Eli.
No, I have no connection with the Ivy League.
All right. Okay, so we got a couple. We have a related question to what he just asked, but we're almost out of our hour, and we have asked less than half of our questions. So the first question is, when can you come on again?
You know I'm always available for you guys.
That means tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow might be a little too quick. Besides, you only do this once a week, don't you?
Yeah, but anyway.
He feels like he's on a roll.
We'll
arrange that off the air.
We'll arrange it off the air, but please come back. We have, when our listeners said, let's ask questions to Bob, they took us seriously, and boy, did they. But you were talking about Ivy League, so let's segue from that into Phil Ivey. He's appealing his case in London. He's lost the first two rounds. It's going to the High Court there, whatever it's called. What is your prediction?
My prediction is it will be decided by what is finally determined to be the law in Great Britain.
Oh, that's useful.
I don't have a prediction because, again, you have the smart alecky professional gambler and the rarefied state actor, state corporate sanctioned actor. That's Crockford, right?
Crockford,
yes. So I think there's politics behind it because logically I've read at least the first decision, and I think that judge very severely undervalued the level of the consideration that is to be given to competition. And, also, that decision, and I don't remember what the judge called it, but he called it essentially
deception,
not sporting.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is hardly a rule of law.
It might be in England, though.
Well, and there you go.
Like Indians.
So you've gone full circle and come back to where I started. It may well be in England because those people have a lot of consideration to things like being sporting.
All right.
Didn't they even fight whole wars and not lose tens of thousands of people because the other way wasn't sporting?
That's a show for a different podcast. Maybe we'll cover that one next time you're on. A few more questions, squeeze them in. Let's say a player has $40,000 in casino cash. The casino agrees he came by it legally at a table game. The player has...
Wait, what do you mean by casino cash?
Oh, excuse me. Let's say he has $40,000 in casino chips that he's trying to cash. When the player has valid ID, but not a social security number. For this amount of chips, the casino has to fill out a currency transaction report, which, among other things, requires a social security number.
The report has a place for a social security number upon it.
Well, but also, I'm guessing this must be a player from a foreign country, right? Because how could a U.S. player not have a social security number?
But no, you're okay. Let me jump to the end of the question because we're running out
of time. Yeah, the end of the question is failure to have the social security number a sufficient reason for the casino not to pay you?
I say no. FinCEN may argue with me.
And that's the
Financial Crimes Division of the Department of Justice that determines whether or not CTRs are appropriately filled out. I think the current situation, the way I read the law, is that the casino's obligation is to fill out the CTR with all the information that they can get, but they have no ability to require any.
So if the player doesn't give him the name, you still have to pay him?
Yeah. But that doesn't mean there's not going to be an SAR filed on you.
Suspicious activity report.
I don't think you could get out the door. Even in Nevada, if you called gaming, I don't think they would give you the money.
I understand. And you're right. They wouldn't. Although they may let you out the door if you give gaming the information.
Oh, yeah, but gaming's always just going to give it to the casino.
Not always. Not anymore. I know of two situations where gaming did not give the name of the individual to the casino. Now, those were on payoffs of less than $10,000.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, what right does that casino have to your identity? You're allowed to go. I mean, your transaction is already completed with the casino, right?
Yeah.
You've gambled. Whatever contract you had has been fulfilled. Now you're just getting paid on it. Okay? what pertinent information to the commercial deal that the two of you have arrived at, that being the casino and the player, is contained in your name? Nothing. Okay? So your anonymity should be protected. You have a right in this country to remain anonymous.
Not for much longer.
No, you're right. Current situations with the current attorney general may indicate that indeed George Orwell was not all that far, was only off by a
couple
30
decades,
years.
Yeah.
Although I am not complaining about our current administration, just portions of it.
But I do just want to say, in the case where it is a foreign player, there is some form that they have that they can fill out that gives them a number. It's not a TIN, but it's some other name for a number for a foreign person.
Right.
That
and depending on the country, sometimes the casino withholds
30%
or something, at least on jackpots. I don't know if that's the same in table games.
Yeah, I've dealt with this. It's 30, and it's, well, wait a minute. The one I have is 2,500 on 15,000, so whatever that percentage is. What?
That's good.
Oh. It's 1/6.
Yeah, it's like 18% or something.
Yes,
like
it's
that.
Not 1/6, but good. One last question.
Actually, close. Yes, it is 1/6.
18% is not 1/6.
No. 2,500 is 1/6 of 15,000.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, it is. That's 16.7%.
I went to MIT.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I didn't.
How frequently, Bob Nersesian, have you called up a casino and said, "Hi, I'm Bob Nersesian, and I'm looking into the situation involving such and such a player"? When the casino hears who you are, they say basically, "Shit, we don't want you to kick our ass in court. We'll give them $10,000. Will that satisfy your client?"
Holy crap, do you guys give me way too much credit.
Has that ever happened?
I don't think in my entire life I've said I'm Bob Nersesian and watched anybody cower in fear. Usually it's so. Okay. But no, seriously, what I have been able to do, not citing to my name, but citing to my status as an attorney, I have been able to get people out of the back room on numerous occasions. But on a phone call, get a settlement? Never. What I have had happen a couple to a few times would be a preservation of evidence letter results in a preemptive offer.
So in other words, you say, we need you to keep the surveillance tape from last Tuesday on table number 17. And when you do that, they make you an offer. Is that what we're talking about?
When they do that, it gets to their lawyer. Their lawyer knows who I am and will do a preemptive call to me and say, if we're going to stay out of all the crap that's coming down the pike, then I've got this kind of money as a quick out for you. And I have to, at that point, take it to my client. And I have had clients say, as an example, yeah, I'll take the 10. And I'm going, but now I only get 3,300. And they're going, yeah, but I get 7,700, and that's all, and I'm happy with that.
And so, I get 2 years of my life back.
Yes.
Or three. Yes. Or
thank you for recognizing, and you can tell your clients that going through litigation with me or anyone else is never a pleasant experience. Although some clients, many of them, have found it a fulfilling experience because they have now participated in an area of society that they otherwise never would have had that opportunity, and they walk away going, I learned so much, I can't believe it. And then I go, yeah, what's the biggest thing you learned? And they go, that lawyers are very expensive, and I can't believe how little I got compared to what you walked away with.
Well, that's always a good lesson to know. Yeah, stay out of divorce lawyers. Thank you, Bob Nersesian. This is great.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to do it again soon. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.